Hello, and welcome to Prickly, a podcast from KJZZ's Politics Desk. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ben Giles.
I'm Wayne Chutsky.
And I'm Cameron Sanchez.
And we are the KJZZ Politics Desk, and today we're going to talk about the 2024 legislative session that officially ended on June 15th. We're just getting around to breaking it all down for you, the major accomplishments, the overlooked moments, and everything in between. Let's start with kind of the foundational piece of every session, the state budget. It's literally the one job that they have to do every year. Cameron, you spent some very late nights at the Capitol in June as lawmakers pushed through this bipartisan budget deal, about a $16 billion budget this year, far less than the year prior. But bipartisan doesn't necessarily mean this is a beloved budget.
No, I think I had more fun at the Capitol than maybe the lawmakers did. Unfortunately, not everybody was enthusiastic about the budget this year, and lawmakers went into the budget season facing a $1.4 billion deficit, which required them to make really deep cuts and to claw back some funding to projects and agencies that they had planned to fund in former years. So in the end, the budget did make it through with some bipartisan support and also some bipartisan opposition.
Can you talk a little bit about what was clawed back? Talk about what is the state going to be missing out on because of the budget cuts that were in place?
A big cut went to water, and another big section is transportation projects. So those are not necessarily permanent cuts, but funding that had been sort of planned to go to those projects was held back, at least for the time being.
Gotcha. Now, We know this historically from covering the Capitol, but for those who don't follow the budget closely every year, this is usually a pretty quick process. A lot of negotiations happen behind closed doors, and then there's a deal that's eventually put on paper, and within a matter of literally three days is what's required to pass a bill. That's how long it takes them to get a budget through. So can you talk about how that process played out at the budget this year? What was some of the feedback that you were getting from rank and file lawmakers, Republicans and Democrats alike?
Right. Well, as you say, it's very common for the budget to go through very quickly. And that was the case again this year, which was frustrating for a lot of the members on both sides of the aisle who said, you know, we're voting on stuff that we just got a few days ago. We don't have enough time to go through it all and check it. And we wish that we had been more included in the process. So last year, to get people on board with the budget, Republicans got to spend about $20 to $30 million and allocate it on whatever their priorities were. And that was a good way to get people on board. But we didn't do that this year because there wasn't enough money to go around. And I think that was something that people wanted more information from leadership from.
And a lot of those lawmakers spent their $20-30 million on projects that are now being scaled back. Is that right?
Right. That's a hard way to get people on board with a budget and say, hey, I thought last year this was part of the deal and now we're not doing it anymore.
Now, it is important to note that the cuts aren't necessarily permanent. The Republican leaders noted funding for these projects can be restored. But how did that message come across with the rank and file members of the caucus?
I would say it's maybe not enough of an assurance for people to say, you know, something could change in the future. It's like, well, yeah, it could change in the future, but that's always true. You know, they would prefer to have it more solidly in writing and more assurance than that, especially with water, for example. Behind closed doors, members of WIFA, the Water Infrastructure Finance Authority, say that they've been assured that the water cuts aren't permanent, but that hasn't been said publicly.
Gotcha. Now, the nature of having a Democratic governor and a Republican-controlled legislature, even if it's controlled by the narrowest of majorities, is compromise. It sounds like compromise this year meant varying degrees of disagreement. Let's talk about those degrees. We saw this year a lot of heated talk from legislative Democrats, for instance, at their own legislative leaders as well as the governor.
That's right. Democrats, by and large, were upset by where this budget went with education. We saw some education dollars stripped away from schools that serve low-income students. This was kind of an added little adjustment. At the same time, there were only a few modifications made to the school voucher program, which is expected to grow in cost, $900 million next year. And those costs are only, it's only going to save about $2.5 million. So we saw Democrats basically saying, you know, this school voucher program, if you look back at its history, was supposed to help underfunded students, students in low-income schools. Now what we're doing is taking money away from those students whilst not really doing anything to touch this voucher program that some data shows is disproportionately helping folks who live in affluent communities.
Now, I know that that was a Democratic demand, and I know that that was something that we heard from Governor Katie Hobbs in January, that she wanted to scale back the cost of this program. But was that really realistic, given who controls the legislature?
It was never realistic. Republican leaders said it was a non-starter, and the governor pointed that out. She said even the concessions that we did get, which included that $2.5 million savings, and along with some other things like background checks for teachers in private schools, are wins, given that they initially said they wouldn't come to the table on any change to the program. That funding scale back with the students in the low-income schools was kind of seen as adding insult to injury. Democrats weren't necessarily expecting to get all the ESA cuts or voucher cuts they wanted. But then when you add that into it, that was kind of a step too far for some of them.
Gotcha. Minor cuts for vouchers, but a bigger cut for charter and public school districts.
Correct.
Democrats, though, weren't alone in their disappointment with their party leaders, Wayne. What frustrated rank-and-file Republicans most about this budget?
If we want to go back to those changes to the voucher program, you know, Dems said they didn't go too far, but Republicans said they were way too far. We saw Representative Joseph Chaplick stand up and basically say this is kind of the first step towards really reining in this program. And he may not be wrong. If Democrats take control of the legislature this year, this is obviously just a harbinger of what they would like to do moving forward, which is much grander scale backs to that program.
This is one example of where we see what happens at the legislature becomes a talking point on the campaign trail. We'll certainly be hearing more about school vouchers for the next 4 months. Cameron, you mentioned the Water Infrastructure Finance Authority earlier. Can you talk us through in a little more detail what they were supposed to get based on past budgets and where they're at now?
Well, if we take it back to 2022, when Governor Ducey was leaving office, it was this big push at the end of that legislative session to allocate $1 billion to WIFA over the course of 3 years. And it was sort of understood that that was for an augmentation project like desalination, for example, something to bring in new water to Arizona and protect our supply for the future. And that sort of fell apart the next year because the new legislative leaders and governor clawed back a lot of that WIFA funding last year. And then this year, the WIFA was set to receive $333 million, and they put a stop to that completely. Plus, they took out some of the money that WIFA was supposed to have in other funds. So water definitely took the hardest hit. I think there's this mindset that water is not an urgent concern, that there are things like public safety, for example, that are always the priority, that those are immediate. And water is sort of never really on the top of most lawmakers' minds. And so it was an area that you could sort of look at and say, it's fine to delay this.
And I think this is also a good example of the fallacy of budgeting for years and years in advance. We saw Governor Ducey tout this $1 billion commitment to water in his final year in office, but two-thirds of that commitment was scheduled to be appropriated after he left. You know, what's been the message from Governor Katie Hobbs and Republican lawmakers who aren't following through on that promise?
Well, they're saying that water is still a priority. WIFA, it looks like, has a longer way to go. They seem to be closer to a deal in 2022 with a particular company. And then there was a lot of blowback about how it seemed like a deal had maybe already been made behind closed doors. And so WIFA altered their course, and they aren't accepting solicitations for big projects, but they're going to start that soon. So they don't technically need the money on hand right now, but they are going to want it at some point in the future, and it really depends on who's sitting in the legislature and the governor's office when that time comes.
Now, it's also important to note, just in the context of things, WIFA stood out, but it was not alone in budget cuts.
So agencies across the board took about a 3.5% cut. An average cut. And some agencies were exempt from that. So we really prioritized public safety again. We exempted DPS, Department of Public Safety, also Department of Child Safety. I think everyone sort of agreed that those were just areas that we needed to prioritize.
Gotcha. Tough cuts for most state agencies, Wayne.
And it's worth noting, going back, that the two kind of defining moments of the past two legislatures, the big water deal under Ducey and then kind of all the pork spending by legislators last year, have both been mostly wiped out by this budget.
Mm-hmm. This was not an easy year for lawmakers. Or if you're working at state agencies, I'm sure it's not going to be a fun 12 months either. But as you just mentioned, defining issues, there's usually one or two issues every legislative session, and I've given up trying to predict what they're going to be in January, but one or two issues that kind of suck the air out of the room at the Capitol. Was that the case again this year?
I'd say there was probably more than two. It seemed like every week we were getting hit with a new issue that we didn't see coming that then for the next few weeks dominated headlines. But this year, I'd say the top two were probably the border and abortion policy. The Supreme Court's decision to reinstate that old territorial era total abortion ban really kind of threw everyone for a loop there, and it created a showdown at the Capitol between Republicans and Democrats, but also forced some moderate Republicans or those running in the competitive district to choose a side because abortion access is proven broadly popular with Arizona voters. And so what we ended up seeing is it's just given our evenly divided legislature, a few of those competitive district Republicans ended up siding with Democrats and overturning that or repealing that territorial era abortion ban.
And I really want to hammer this home because this is a point that I think really divided Republicans, not just here in Arizona, but nationally. Most of the Republicans in the legislature were perfectly happy with the territorial ban being enforceable and remaining in place. So how again did it get undone?
So, yeah, as you said, when they passed the 15-week law that we're now currently living under, they explicitly made the decision not to repeal the old one, which would indicate that many of the folks down there, that's what they wanted the law of the land to be, assuming Roe was overturned, which it was. But what happened is, I think, whether it be their own personal beliefs, as T.J. Shope said, he said, I never anticipated Roe being overturned when I voted for the previous law. 15 weeks sits better with me. Or whether it just be pragmatic politics. We saw T.J. Shope, we saw Shauna Bullock in the Senate, and we saw Matt Gress in the Arizona House of Representatives side with Democrats. And I think the other political side of it is, I think the 15-week law is a lot more defensible at the ballot, they believe, versus the pre-Dobbs decision, abortion protections, that a current ballot initiative is trying to put before voters.
Yeah, an issue that really fiercely divided the Republican caucus there for a little while. And it'll be interesting to see if those votes, for and against the territorial ban have any implications at the ballot box come later this month, the primary election, and then in November, the general. But the Republican infighting at the Capitol didn't last. Wayne, Republicans then came back, kind of rebounded from abortion with their own key issue for voters to put something on the ballot.
Yeah, so we first saw them maybe a little whisper that they might try to come back on abortion and come up with some of their own stuff there, and that kind of quickly died down, and instead they went with the border, which politically makes sense because it's another issue at top of mind for voters across political spectrums, but especially Republican voters. And so what they did was they created what was called HCR 2060, but it basically would criminalize crossing the border illegally in state law, giving state police and sheriffs and local police the power to enforce that, very similar to the controversial Texas law that's currently being litigated. It also includes other aspects, additional penalties if you deal fentanyl that results in death, and they included a clause that if the fentanyl came from Mexico, we're still not sure how you prove that. And then there's also some employment and public benefits laws to stop people from using fake documents to obtain those. So there's this really broad omnibus border bill that they referred to voters because the main section of it, that border crossing piece, was already vetoed by the governor. And as you said, this brought Republicans back together. This was a unified front. This was a party line vote. Democrats totally against it. Republicans totally for it. And now it looks like it's on its way to the ballot pending legal challenges.
And if it is on the ballot, how big of an issue do you think this border initiative could have on legislative races?
I think it could have a big impact. It gives, number one, those competitive district Republicans something to fight on, that they might be taking some flack from the further right wing on their abortion vote, but they can say, hey, I secured the border. You can see votes coming there. It's playing into congressional races where House Speaker Ben Thoma, who is the sponsor of the bill, is running for Congress, and is very heavily playing into the fact that he sponsored border legislation as he seeks to get that nomination out in the West Valley.
And I think it's important to note the constitutionality of at least one portion of that measure is highly in question. It is very similar to a law in Texas about illegal border crossings that is going through legal challenges as we speak. So we'll have to wait and see, even if voters approve that, if it's something that can or cannot be enforced. Cameron, back to you. We did have this bipartisan budget, so there was a moment of simpatico between the Republicans who control the legislature and Democrats like Governor Katie Hobbs. There were also some high-profile battles that Hobbs and also Attorney General Chris Mays waged with Republican lawmakers this year.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there was a really big shakeup in the 2022 election where Democrats took a bunch of state offices. Democrats won the governor's office, the attorney general's office, the secretary of state's office, and are holding those positions, but still dealing with the Republican-controlled legislature. So naturally, there's been quite a lot of friction there. And over the past couple of years with, Katie Hobbs negotiating with them, there's been lots of starts and stops because they do have to negotiate on things like the budget. But, a lot of the time, the headlines are that they're fighting and they're embroiled in court battles. This year, there were a lot of issues with Attorney General Chris Mays and Republicans. They even had a committee for the purpose of examining Mays and her actions. They accused her of abusing her power against Republicans by not upholding certain laws or not wanting to defend them in court anyway. And also with her actions on rural groundwater, for example, and her statements about abortion and the fake electors case.
Right, right. The elephant in the room. How much does this all really have to do with a grand jury indictment of 18 individuals, including two sitting state lawmakers, in a alleged scheme to throw Arizona's Electoral College votes from 2020 to former President Trump, even though the state's real winner was President Joe Biden?
Right. Well, I think it depends on who you ask. I'd say that, Mays, before she came into office, noted that this is something that she wanted to investigate. And she's a Democrat and they're Republicans. And when former Attorney General Mark Brnovich, who was also a Republican, was in office, he really didn't do anything in terms of prosecuting this case and investigating it. And Mays has made that one of her priorities. The grand jury indictments came down somewhat recently, and then there was this effort against Mays in the legislature, and they even suggested impeaching her, which didn't end up happening. But two of those current lawmakers, Anthony Kern and Jake Hoffman, are very against Mays. Kern certainly encouraged the idea of impeaching her. So it's yet to be determined where that court case goes, but I would expect much more friction in the future.
Gotcha, gotcha. And of course, impeachment would be a long shot, given that it requires a two-thirds majority vote in the Senate, and the Republicans only have a one-vote majority in that chamber.
Well, you can impeach someone in the House of Representatives with a simple majority, but to actually get them kicked out of office, yes, you need more than that in the Senate, and it just seems unrealistic.
Gotcha, gotcha. Now, what about butting heads with the governor? This was year two for her and legislative Republicans. As we mentioned, they did agree on a budget, but did they improve relations at all elsewhere?
I think there was a lot more fighting with Mays this year, but there was still plenty to go around with Governor Hobbs. A lot of it had to do with agency continuations and directors. So as required by state law, the governor's picks to lead agencies have to be confirmed by the state Senate. And last year, that didn't go very well. They refused to hear a lot of her picks, or they rejected them. Only a few of them got through. Eventually, she pulled them and she assigned those people the title of deputy director, but they served sort of the same role, which led to a lawsuit, and that's playing out in the court right now. Also this year, I think Democrats were somewhat frustrated by what they saw as a slow walking or intentional sabotaging of certain state agencies. Agencies also have to go through continuation at the legislature, and the ones that needed to squeak through squeaked through, but there were some recommendations of cutting some state agencies altogether or giving them really, really short continuations, which Hobbs did not appreciate.
Yeah, traditionally, agencies are continued for about 8-year time periods, and we saw some 2- and 4-year continuations, which Republicans argued could provide better oversight of agencies, but also could just sweep them into a bureaucratic mess every 2 years instead of every 8 years.
Right.
All right, I think this was the music cue.
I think that's a lot, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to an extra long episode of the Prickly Podcast. Thank you for joining myself, Wayne, and Cameron for this legislative look back. And thank you, as always, for listening. You can also tune in to KJZZ at 91.5. You can follow us at kjzz.org. And please subscribe to Prickly wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.